Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Oh, welcome in. You are listening to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck, and I'm your host for the first hour. In this first hour, I am going to spend the first two segments with our good friend Peter Buchvar, and then shift a little bit more into the resource sector and get some comments on maybe some of the opportunities available in some of the especially precious metals companies. As I mentioned, kicking off today with Peter Buchvar. He is the Chief Investment Officer over at Bleakley Advisory Group. Now, Peter, you are, when this airs, are going to be in New Orleans at the New Orleans Investment Conference. This is the first year that I am missing it, but I will be back next year. Provide us with a little insights into what your theme is and what your talk is going to be about at this conference, please.
Well, I'm going to be talking about what I believe is a change in tone in terms of global interest rates. And I think the catalyst for that was the sort of rethink on the part of the BOJ and the ECB with what they've done to their yield curves. You have the Bank of Japan that has spent the last 20 years trying to suppress the cost of money. And now that the Japanese bank stock index has fallen 90% over the past 30 years, they finally realized that maybe a yield curve is something that we need. So they actually said that they want higher long-term interest rates. And then you switch to the ECB, and in the September meeting where Draghi moved again to lower negative interest rates, notwithstanding the tiering, and added to QE, that there was essentially an internal revolt against what he's done. So I think that the extreme monetary policy that we've seen over the past 10 years is coming to an end. Now, who knows what the Fed will end up doing? But in terms of the negative rate rethink, negative rate experiment, I think is being rethought here. And I think we're at an interesting endgame. So I argue that the August lows in yields, which preceded the move by the ECB and then also some more rate cuts by the Fed, could be the low for a while in global bond yields. Now, there obviously is going to be this tug of war between that and also the growth story. So that we'll see how that plays off. But I think at least for now, I think that this is a game changer in terms of this grand monetary experiment. And then what that means for the rest of the markets and in the tone of a softening economy, some weakening in credit markets on the bottom rung of junk world, and you know, what this means going into 2020 with still the risks of the slowing global growth and obviously in the U.S. in election season.
All right, Peter, let's talk a little bit about the ECB and the Bank of Japan, though, because they really controlled their bond market. They were buying pretty much everything. They were buying everything at some points. How quickly or easily are they going to be able, though, to step away from that?
Well, extraordinarily difficult. I mean, they're trapped, essentially. I think the what has precipitated this discussion is what they've done to their banks. And how can you have a healthy economy if you have a dysfunctional banking system where banks can't even make money on any loans? And it's sort of like in an internet company that's losing money, but they say they're going to make it up on volume, even though they lose money on each loan. So getting out of this is extraordinarily difficult. But the irony is that let's just say they get what they want and they get faster growth and they get higher inflation. Well, that would then get them to start raising interest rates, and then that would blow up their bond markets. So there's a very difficult situation that they're in that I don't see how this ends well, because I just also don't see that negative interest rates is a forever policy. Well, I've always referred to negative interest rates as poison, but I read an interesting analogy the other day that, you know, look at it as steroids. You know, initially it feels good, but then over time it just dissolves the bones.
And that's what we've seen too, right, is the fact that as some countries went further into negative territory, or even as the Fed did kind of cut rates throughout this year and even drop the 10-year down below 1.5%, we weren't seeing the type of economic impact or benefit that I think all these central banks hope for. Can you address that?
Well, that's clear. And you know, central banks have a very simplistic way on how they look at the world. They see lower rates good, higher rates bad, and if lower rates are good, why don't you just continue to lower them? But what you do by lowering them is you're encouraging borrowing, and then you reach a point where there's so much debt that each incremental cut has less and less of an impact, and that it takes more and more debt to generate a dollar of GDP. And I think we've reached that point, and that's why we're pushing on a string here in terms of the central bank ability to stimulate new growth. And if rates are low forever, well, you're not really stimulating anything. You know, the whole point of stimulation from a monetary standpoint is to get you to behave today and utilize low rates to purchase something, whether it's a house or a car or something else, instead of waiting till tomorrow. Well, if rates are low forever, well, then there's no stimulation to do it today. You can just wait till tomorrow. There's no rush because, you know, the cost of capital is not going anywhere.
So then does this all trickle down into, let's say, the markets or even into consumer spending or business spending, that if central banks can drive home the point that, you know what, they aren't tied to negative interest rates forever, that we could see a little boost in spending? Consumers have still been spending, but businesses haven't.
Yeah, businesses, I think, have worried about the slowdown in global manufacturing and trade. And that has caused a sharp reduction in the level of confidence, and you're less confident, then you're going to spend less. So if over time, if the central banks reverse themselves, that would be a good thing. But, you know, a heroin addict doesn't go from cold turkey to feeling great overnight. You know, there's a withdrawal period, and we would have to go through that, unfortunately, for a period of time, and a nasty recession and a disruption in global capital markets when they do reverse themselves. But it's something that would be good over time.
Okay, so you use the term recession there. It's been thrown around a lot. A lot of people saying 2020 is going to be the next recession, but there's also a narrative of saying that the central banks, or quite frankly, economies, could be able to push that out until after 2020. Do you have a thought, an opinion on when that recession will hit?
The question is really what happens to the consumer from here, and it will be determined by the labor market, and I also argue the stock market. The labor market has seen a moderation in the pace of hiring. Now, that's in response to, on one hand, the lack of available labor, but also a reluctance to add payroll in today's uncertain economic environment. But that has not led to a pickup in firings, as seen by the very low level of jobless claims. And as long as that's the case, the labor market will hang in. I'm sure consumer spending will be okay. But once it starts to impact jobless claims, well, then you're taking more dramatic steps closer to a possible recession. Second thing is, and I always talk about this, is that we're so tied to asset prices. We're so tied to the stock market that if you were to get a correction, and I have no idea when that would be, that would be have a dramatic impact on consumer spending, and that could tip us over into recession. Just as we saw a sharp decline in consumer spending in Q1 and Q2 of this year after the fourth quarter decline in the stock market.
Now let's talk about some of the moves that we've seen in not just the U.S. market, but global markets. We've seen a general shift towards a bit more of a risk-on attitude as we've had some international markets break to highs for the year. We've also had U.S. equity markets at all-time highs. But you know what? We haven't exactly seen a sharp sell-off in a lot of these risk-off assets either. What's the balance here? What do you think is most important for investors as we move through this year and into next year?
Well, the equity investors are in on this belief that the Fed can engineer a soft landing and cutting rates is going to make everything okay and we'll get a China trade deal and everything will be fine. Let's hope so. But I'm less confident that rate cuts from a very low level are going to have much of an impact. And it's becoming apparent that any China trade deal it's going to be more cosmetic in nature and will still leave a lot of tariffs on the books that I don't see coming off anytime soon. So that will still be a crimp, and I think it'll still be a headwind for growth next year. We just got some fourth quarter GDP estimates. Now the third quarter number has already been released, and the New York Fed has a fourth quarter GDP estimate of 0.8%. not 1.8, but 0.8%. And the Atlanta Fed has their first estimate is 1.1%. Now, these can change. We can see an improvement, but growth is clearly slowing here. We saw it in the ISM manufacturing number, which is below 50 for a third straight month. We will get soon the ISM services index, and we'll see how that goes. But I think once investors realize that Fed rate cuts are not going to help and that a China trade deal cosmetically is not going to reverse the slowdown, then there'll be a reassessment. But at least for now, there's this, you know, hopium that's being smoked. And, you know, they'll smoke it until they get disabused of it.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And you know what? People do still want to get bullish and almost complacent into some of these risk-on assets. But there is still, again, that underlying demand for some of the risk off. Let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar, it is still within this uptrend that it's been in for almost 2 years now. However, it is testing out the lower range of this upward trend. How worried do investors need to be, or how important is it if the dollar breaks down from here?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think on one hand, obviously the easy response is that it helps exporters, but at least in the U.S., it's only 10% of the U.S. economy. I think we need to be careful if we do get a weaker dollar, because that can lead to less participation in U.S. markets, particularly in corporate bond markets. We know the Japanese, for example, have been huge buyers of U.S. Corporate bonds on an unhedged basis. So you don't want to lose that flow of capital. You certainly don't want to import inflation, considering how low interest rates are. And I think that would be a negative. But it's just something we have to see. Everyone looks at the dollar homogeneously. I like to look at it against its different trading partners. And you know, the dollar's really just been chopping around for a while against non-troubled economies. And I say non-troubled, not talking about the Turkish lira or the Argentinian peso. You know, the dollar against the Canadian dollar. Canadian dollar is back to where it was in 2015. Even the peso, Mexican peso, stopped selling off. And the dollar euro is where it was 4 years ago. And the dollar yen's not much different. And yeah, the pound has obviously had sharp weakness, but that's related to Brexit. And now that Brexit looks like it's closer to getting resolved, the pound's had a sharp rally. So the dollar there's something bothering the dollar. And whether it's the rising debt and deficits, whether it's the Fed back in doing its liquidity injections via repo and adding reserves again to their balance sheet, something's up with the dollar. And I expect that trend to continue.
Okay, so you mentioned the Fed's actions in the repo market. Let's dive a little bit more into that, because this has been ongoing now for a couple months, ever since the last Fed meeting, when we started to hear that the Fed needed to inject some money because of a so-called plumbing issue for the repo market. The only problem is that this action by the Fed in the repo market has continued and now is expected to continue through next year. What are your thoughts on the importance of what the Fed has been forced to do in the repo markets?
Well, I think part of it is end of the year, and you have limitations on the extent that banks are willing to sort of lend their balance sheet, you know, the primary dealer banks, to absorb the huge amount of supply that's coming from the U.S. Treasury to fund the exploding U.S. budget deficit. And then you have these non-bank dealers that are trying to take on Treasury inventory, but they have to finance that through the repo market, and they're all running to the repo market and having to pay up in order to absorb these treasuries. So the Fed is trying to be a buyer to not only inject reserves, but to help absorb a huge amount of the supply. So in a sense, they are monetizing short-term T-bills in the U.S. I think the real test will be what happens in January, February, when the year-end pressures end, because a lot of banks just want to sort of shut down their balance sheet after Thanksgiving in the U.S. in November, late November, and that they won't really extend that until we get back to January, February. So to me, that'll be the real test of what's going on. But certainly regulations and the massive amount of Treasury supply are creating these supply-demand imbalances that the Fed is trying to offset.
So taking a step back, big picture here, if we do get higher rates globally and if we do see still some weakness in the dollar or at least less people looking at the dollar as kind of a safe haven play, could we see a fairly significant almost mass exodus out of U.S. markets?
No, I mean, that's dramatic to say. We have to see how this stuff plays out. I think right now we need to see what a trade deal is going to look like. We need to see the state of the tariffs, because if it's really not much, then I expect the slowing global trend that we've been seeing in 2019 to accelerate in 2020, and that it will bleed into the labor market and have broader consequences. And at some point, investors will lose faith in the Fed's ability to offset that with rate cuts, since rates are already low. I mean, when you think about the stock market's at a record high, and the Fed funds rate is only 1.5%. I mean, is the U.S. economy in that good of shape that we can handle a Fed funds rate north of 1.5 to 1.75%? I mean, there's an issue here that I don't think enough people are thinking bigger picture.
Yeah, that's what's important, the big picture. And it's crazy the type of situation that the financial world globally really is in. Let's wrap it up with your quick comments on gold here. The gold market went through a pretty substantial breakout just this year, finally got above that almost 6-year trading range that it was in. We've seen some of the majors start to do a bit better. Overall, though, some of the gold stocks are still lagging. But you know what? Gold, even with this short-term little pullback, it's only been a little pullback. What's your thought on the overall gold market?
I think gold trade's great. I think it had a nice run over the 1500 level. And it's now consolidating. And now that you're getting the weakness in the dollar, it's setting itself up for that next move. So I think this is textbook bull market type action with the consolidation, needed rest that's recharging its batteries for the next move higher.
Now, do you think that next move could come even before year end, or is this something that we look to 2020 for?
I think we'll have to see the economic data. And I think if the data continues to soften, then it could be before the end of the year. Now, making a prediction on what happens in 2 months is tough, but I think that could be one of the factors that make it happen at the end of this year, or we have to wait till next year.
All right. Hey, Peter, it's always great having you on the show. I'm sorry that we're not getting a chance to hang out down in New Orleans over this weekend, but as I said, next year I will be there. And hey, I appreciate all of the time that you spend on our show sharing some of your insights. It's always, I think, very important to listen to what you have to say. Peter, thanks for your time this weekend. Have a great weekend.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.